Sid, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent. How about you guys?
Good. Very good. Thank you.
Well, you know, we should check in before we dive into all the action. Give us the status. What are we hearing from the pods, and how's Joe handling things, you know, practicing and staying fit and waiting for, you know, whatever kind of season we're going to have?
Well, you know, thanks for asking. It's fraught times even in sports, you know, and especially if you're in the minor league, because they're still working on a major league schedule at the moment. And, you know, I don't know if you're aware of this. You might have seen a tweet I put out, but there's, you know, concurrent discussions between major leagues and the minor leagues about cutting about 40 teams in the minor leagues. So for these young guys, it's, you know, it's a really scary time. Not only are they not playing at the moment, but, you know, they're looking at their, you know, potential futures being cut off. So it's, you know, it's a tough time for them. And having said that, again, thanks for asking about Joe. He's, you know, we've had some friends, kids that Joe played with, kids that were on my team when we grew up, you know, on our team. One of them just got released from his team. He was in the minors, which, you know, is kind of sad for him. Joe's still there, and even though they have, he's in Tampa. It's interesting. You should mention this. Ask me about this today, Steve, because just yesterday he worked out with Pete Alonso and Dominic Smith of the Mets, two big leaguers, and
sure.
They're in Tampa too. So he's going to be working out with them. With the blessing of the Padres, and so that gives them a chance to, you know, work out with some, you know, big name guys.
Very cool. I love it.
Yeah.
Well, it's, you know, also the more players you meet from other organizations, sort of a, you know, kind of a safety net, insurance, you know, to,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
it doesn't
is.
Hurt.
Nice,
doesn't
right?
hurt. Yeah, well, it does feel, I mean, with certain things starting to loosen up, and with, you know, with some scheduling of other sports. I mean, obviously we're focused on, you know, on equine sport, but you feel like things are you know, starting to find their way, and
yeah.
You know, of course the, you know, the confirmation from health officials that outdoor settings are safer, way safer.
I mean,
almost safe, period. That, I think that bodes well for, you know, for where we're headed.
It bodes well for a lot of things, from racing to other sports. And that's one area I've kind of done a lot of research on privately myself too. And a lot of the stuff you read, you know, you find that the more you delve into it from what's, you know, legitimate scientific experiments or studies so far, that very few cases, I think, whether it's in, you know, here or abroad, very few cases have been transmitted outdoors. Most of them indoors, workplace settings, you know, working conditions with air conditioning that kind of keeps aerosols in the air, droplets in the air, the aerosol effect. So, you know, the outdoor settings, the wind, all of that tend to minimize it as much as possible. So that's, yeah, it's all great news for, you know, for all of us. You know, and that's one of the things with racing, too. It's really pretty, it's excellent that, you know, we're able to start up and continue.
Well, since we went in this direction, I'll save the 49er portion of the discussion for after the Triple Crown portion. And Sid, we did touch on, you know, speculation about a, you know, distance shortened Belmont, as well as the timing elements of running in September and October, the Preakness and Derby obviously locked in. Expand on, you know, I don't know if you heard my early portion of the show, but I mean, to me, this isn't even, you know, the people that are carrying on about the sanctity of the Triple Crown. It's just preposterous. You know, 3 year olds running in September and October in age restricted races is not the Triple Crown season. And it's not the task, the assignment that the Triple Crown is, you know, in May and early June. It's a different animal. So why is anybody aghast at the Belmont being run at 9 furlongs for 1 year?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's extraordinary circumstances. It's an extraordinary year. I mean, it's the same thing with, you know, baseball season. If it goes, it's going to be 82 games instead of 160, you know, two. I mean, you make you should just be happy that you're able to do it.
Yes.
The distances are immaterial at the moment. It's just, you know, we're glad that there's one in June, and they're going to have a Derby and a Preakness. And, you know, I think people should be really thankful that they're going to go off. Also, you know, it's not like, I guess since 1925, the Belmont's been run at a mile and a half. But all of these races, you know, sometimes you have to understand that the history of them during various eras, you know, they've changed. And Belmont was run at 9 furlongs twice. And it's going to be run at that again. You know, it's, again, to me, I'm just happy that the race is going to be run. I think that if the race was run at a mile and a half, it's a big ask to get these 3-year-olds who haven't had many starts and were preparing to run a month earlier, a mile and a quarter, to go a mile and a half. I mean, it's just, it's not feasible. It's like asking players to baseball season's going to start and you throw them right into the game. You know, you got to have a period of once again getting fit, getting ready, having the reps and having some spring training games before you can be thrown into the mix. And likewise with race horses, you know, most of these horses have had, you know, one race or two, a mile and an eighth in a couple of cases, but, you know, honestly wouldn't have made sense to have these horses come up next month and go a mile and a half without any kind of real preparation race-wise. So, you know, I can see how they, you know, I thought they might make it a mile and a quarter, sort of like the Derby was that they started off with, but you know, it's I can't really quibble about the distance personally, and you know, I like mile and a half races, but I can't quibble about it.
Yeah, there was. I want to bring up a client of yours, as well as Barkley Tag, connected to Chuck Fipke. First, let me congratulate Chuck through you on last night's distinguished award from the Sovereigns, and basically, you know, sort of right.
Yeah,
well, it's like the Eclipse Award of Merit, essentially, in Canada.
Right.
And did you see Barkley's quote in Mike Welsh's story on Monday?
No. What did
this,
you
you'll love this. This is so Barkley.
Yeah.
You know, he said that he really doesn't like the idea of the race being shortened, you know, to the, you know, the mile and an eighth. But just because people might not, you know, look at it as a classic. But this was the portion of the thing that made me just sort of say, you know, that's so Barkley. I know I wouldn't mind going a mile and a half with him right now. In other words, he can go a mile and a half. You know, he's that horse is fit. He's ready, and bring on whatever you want, whenever you want to do it. That is a throwdown. That's the new Barkley.
Yeah, no, that's great. Yeah, I mean, you know, if his horse is probably the most advanced and furthest along. Had a good 2-year-old season. Has been in steady training by a guy that was preparing for this all along, you know. And, yeah, I can see that with Barkley, that he'd be chopping with the bit right now to do it because, you know, his main competition are the Baffert Colts, and, you know, one of them, Nadal, is, you know, he's had the races in him. But the other colt that was syndicated is going to Hillendale, Charlotte, and very likely raced, obviously, just had his first stakes win the other day. And, you know, he probably appreciate another mile and an eighth race before moving up.
Riff a second, Sid, on the topic that actually we had, you know, we had brought up even in advance of this decision to trim the distance of the Belmont for the year. How do you expect the race winners, the entity as it's going to be, you know, be presented by early October? How mm-hmm. do you expect the stallion decision making and you know the bloodstock public, how will any change of how they'll view these horses?
I think you mean talking about a potential Derby winner and a Belmont winner and a Preakness winner.
Travers and Haskell are going to fold into this as well, I imagine. I mean, I think it's going to be viewed as a package. I mean, think of it as the 3-year-old championship kind of discussion.
Yeah, I mean, I think ultimately it's just going to be marked as a year where, you know, these races had to be moved because of what the world experienced, but they're still going to be the same races in the sense that, you know, the best horses are going to be aimed for these races, and they're going to be as competitive as you're going to get, you know, for
sure.
For the 3-year-old races, and they're going to carry weight. So, you know, people are still going to, you know, right, you know, even when you look through history, Europe, you know, there'll be an asterisk, sometimes a wartime Derby winner or stuff like that, where racing was actually interrupted. French horses couldn't come because of the invasion and stuff, which made those races less noteworthy than this. This, you know, it's not keeping horses. As a matter of fact, Chuck Fipke, that you just noted in relation to Barkley, Chuck has a European horse with Joseph O'Brien that's number 2 right now in European points, a choice of mine behind a colt by Glenn Eagles that's trained by Aidan O'Brien. Aidan's horse is 10 points, and Joseph's horse has 8 points. Joseph's is Chuck's horse, Chuck's choice of mine. But you know, he's looking to bring that colt here to race in the Derby. So, you know, it's there's a Japanese path, obviously, the way they have it now. There's a slot for the Japanese and a slot for the Europeans. You got all the top American colts that are still going to be aimed for it. You're going to have even newer horses, as you pointed out very astutely, later developing horses that are going to, it's going to be in their wheelhouse. So even though we're having these late in the year, I think that they'll be accepted as, you know, the best races for three-year-olds, and it'll be interesting to see how who wins and how a championship is given out eventually. But in terms of being on their resume, I'll still, for me, in my analysis, I mean, I still think they're going to be notable as the winners of, you know, you're going to have a Derby winner. And you're going to have a Belmont winner, even if it's a short and 9 furlongs. It's just what happened this year. And you'll have a Preakness winner. And let's face it, if you have this Belmont, Steve, and it draws Tis the Law and Charlatan and Nadal and whoever else, it's going to be as good a race as you're going to see this year. So, I think people are going to understand that these were competitive races. They weren't races that excluded people for, as I pointed out, a wartime incident or something like that. We have a coronavirus that made these races delayed and, in this case, shortened. But, it's not leaving anybody out, and the competition is going to really determine the quality of it.
Well, and, I think, you know, Travers becomes that much more valuable and the biggest, richest, purse events, you know, the Haskell. We had John Himes yesterday from Monmouth. The $1 million Haskell will draw its, you know, its traditional strong field. And, you know, I imagine that, you know, all the obvious candidates, at the, you know, the top of the division will make themselves evident. I mean, it's not all that complex. It is also looking at, for those that listen carefully, and Marty McGee suggested this the other day as well when he was on Friday, said it, looking very much, I'm going to pull up the calendar here quickly, it's looking very much like you could probably pencil in the Bluegrass for July 11th. Because Martin, in his explanation of the placement of the Belmont June 20th, hinting, you know, very clearly that, you know, the key races all had to be spread out as best they could. And, with the Haskell on the 18th and, apparently that those dates that, Keeneland is looking to co-opt from Ellis, in discussion with Ellis Park. It looks like that group of days, and in fact, Marty talked about a potential 5-day meet for Keeneland, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th. But that, based on what I heard just now from Martin Panza, I'm going to guess that concrete has been poured, as it were. All right, so FYI.
I have interesting thing, real quick, is that you're going to have a greater number of races concentrated in a shorter period of time, too. So, if you get a horse that, say, for example, like a Nadal, who Bob Baffert says, you know, thrives in racing and is tough, and, you know, if you get a horse like that can go through a bunch of these races, that we're creating a scenario here to actually showcase, if the horse is up to it, to go through a bunch of races in a much shorter period of time. And, you know, that's a real big test. And if a horse can pass that test, I think he'd carry some extra weight, too, when he went to stud.
Yep. I agree. In fact, the conversation, one of the conversations, the question about, you know, should they be considered a Triple Crown winner? By all rights, it's probably a lot tougher. I mean, considering it'll end up being, you know, should somebody sweep those three races, it's even a unique, bigger and unique accomplishment given how many horses that, you know, like a Maxfield, for instance, that might not have been ready.
And there's
going to be others. You know, there's others we don't even know about.
That's right. That are
going to end up showing up. So, yeah.
That's a very good point. You know, it's going to be potentially more concentrated in depth.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Sid, let's get a pedigree discussion going, and 49ers passing, and we talked to David Donk on Monday, and you know, Dave was there, you know, in Woody's barn, and 49er was one of his absolute favorites that he's been involved in his nice career. David's you know, had plenty on his own as well, but being in that Woody Stevens camp and training ground, Phil Gleaves and Patty Reynolds and others, Billy Badgett. 49ers presence in contemporary pedigrees. I mean, it's pronounced. I mean, at the age of 35, for him to be to show up so often, and of course Tappet has a lot to do with it. But I wanted you to riff on 49er and what he means to the stud book. You know, here particularly, and you know, I know less about what's gone on, you know, once he got exported, but talk about 49er.
Well, you know, 49er, talking about those type of horses, very tough horse, trained by Woody Stevens, very, you know, Seeking the Gold, two sons of 49er, the same year they battled, obviously, over the summer as well. Their three-year-old seasons. I mean, 49er was a horse that just, you know, just a really tough, tough colt. And I believe he won 11 out of 19 starts by the time he went to stud. Claiborne had, he was Claiborne bred and raised, and they had two great sons of their sire, Mr. Prospector, going to stud at the same time, Seeking the Gold for Ogden Phipps. And, you know, when I still, to this day, it's so funny because I still remember, I believe it was the Keeneland September sale when I was there, when I got the call from, oh, it was Jack Wark called me. Jack Wark was. I was in my. Actually, I was in the office at Daily Racing Form office in Lexington, and Jack was in the Keeneland ground. And he called me up, and he told me that somebody had just told him that 49er had been sold and was going to go to Japan, and that was such a huge shock at the time. You know, and it turned out to be true, and he went to Japan. So he left here quite early, but he left quite a presence behind. And the article that you sent to me by Kelly Riley, it's a great recap of his overall influence in this country. It turns out, as we've gone through the years, you know, Mr. Prospector lived to, I think he was 29. A 49er has lived to be 35. And it turns out that his best stallion son is Distorted Humor, who's now 27. Longevity appears to be, you know, one trait that they've shared. That son, Distorted Humor, has turned into his best stallion son. And through Distorted Humor, you know, he's been a top sire. There have been male line descendants of him that have had effects on our classic. I'll have another Flower Alley, Drosselmeyer, so forth. But as Kelly pointed out in her article, a lot of 49ers' daughters and sons who've had daughters have had a huge impact on the breed as well. One of the big great crosses has been with Medaglia d'Oro. That it's known as a great Nick, the Medaglia d'Oro 49er Nick, for example, through various sons of 49er. This encompasses various sons who've had daughters. Well, they, you know, they account for Rachel Alexandra and Songbird just off the top right there. And then there are a bunch of other horses bred on this cross. They include, you know, horses like Elate, New Money Honey. You know, that's just with Medaglia d'Oro. But, of course, he's had huge success with the Unbridled Song line, the Unbridled line. Liam's Map, Unbridled Song out of a Trippy mare, Trippy by N Sweep, who's by 49er, Arrogate. So you've had this huge presence here that continues to show up in the pedigrees of top-level horses. Now, the interesting thing is he went to Japan, and he did have another son go to Japan, too, N Sweep, who's done extremely well there. But he went to Japan, Steve, and he didn't really do anything, sort of like Empire Maker. Both of them, Mr. Prospector line stallions, Empire Maker through Unbridled, Sapiano, Mr. Prospector, in this case, 49er by Mr. Prospector. They didn't really do much over there. And there was a period where there was an attempt to try to get 49er back here, but the Japanese just wouldn't sell him, as they did with Empire Maker. But his, you know, the majority of the, even though there's dirt racing in Japan and it's 50-50 in terms of, you know, how many races are on dirt and turf. However, the 50% that's turf accounts for like 90% of all the group races. So the dirt part of the racing there is really not that prestigious and certainly not internationally known. And it's in the dirt portion where he had more success rather than in the turf portion. So he had maybe 5-6 stakes winners over there compared to what he had here. And his influence really was minimal over there. His son, Hensweet, did much better. But overall, the impact he's had here is remarkable when you consider that, you know, he spent most of his life in Japan. So, as with a lot of these horses that were sent abroad, their impact that they had while they were here, when you consider they didn't have full careers, or if a horse died early and didn't have a full career either, you know, it's quite amazing the impact that he continues to have and has had at the highest levels here, and that's really quite a testament to the horse, both through distorted humor and through the female descendants. And I think Kelly pointed in her article that female side will possibly end up being the biggest part of his legacy. And she's probably correct, unless distorted humor comes up with a few good sons to keep the mail line going. And he does have some sons, but, you know, really a breakout son. I think you're going to find that that his influence will be from the female side of the bottom half of the pedigree, as we say.
You know, you look at his pedigree, you know, just as a as an exercise in how he was crafted, and you know, Mr. Prospector, who at that time was already, let's see, 49er, was foaled in 85. So yeah, Mr. Prospector mm-hmm. was 15, or well, actually 14 when he covered file. The Tom Rolfe mare. Tom Rolfe has come up a couple of different times as a racer last week mm-hmm. with Haskin. But this pedigree, you know, there's only one. There's only one inbreeding that appears in 49er, and it's Nasrullah in an interesting fashion. Nashua got mm-hmm. Gold Digger, Mr. Prospector's Dam, and Nasrullah in the female side is the broodmare sire of the third dam. So there's a female and a male influence by Nasrullah, but that's the only common ancestor in 49ers pedigree. Otherwise, it's, you know, it's really a pretty handsome it's a pretty handsome page. How about you know, Myrtlewood of course in there, you know, for Mr. Prospector as the fourth dam. You look at how about an Hyperion mare, Highway Code, More Brilliance, Double J, the second dam sire, and then Tom Rolfe brings that ranginess and you know, sort of the you know, sort of the big tough ruggedness, you know, son of Rebo. It's really a nice mix. It's Claiborne. I mean, what else do you have to say? It's a very well crafted pedigree wherever you look.
Yeah, I mean, it's a super female family, a Claiborne family. It's the family, I think, of Swale as well, and you know, it's crossing Mr. Prospector with that Rebo line. It's a pedigree that hinted at a combination of speed and stamina, and that's what he showed on the track. I missed the part about asking talking about Tom Rolfe, but Tom Rolfe was a very, very big influence. He was an excellent racehorse, classic winner for Raymond Guest, and he was a horse that went to stud at Claiborne and was one of Rebo's successful sons, you know, and of course his sons included horses like Grouse Stark and His Majesty. But it's an influence for stamina, and it fortified the speed that Mr. Prospector brought to the table, and you saw that in the way this horse ran too. You know, he got that mile and a quarter, and it was very competitive.
You know what's astounding, really? You look at what they tried to do with the dam with file, and she had a Nijinsky colt was her first foal that, you know, won some races, but wasn't very successful stack. Then the first cover by Mr. Prospector, first of three in a row. And file got Series, Refine, and then 49er. Refine ran only once. Series won four races for small money. Then after 49er, she was barren a year. And then had a series of Cox Ridge, two Cox Ridges, another Mr. Prospector, a private account, a Mr. Prospector, and another private account. There was not another horse that she produced that won six figures. And then there's 49er, 11 for 19 for $2.7 million. And no matter what else they tried, they didn't get anything close to him.
Yeah. I mean, and she certainly was bred to, you know, their best horses there all those stallions were, you know, obviously standing in Claiborne.
It just didn't. I mean, it's just funny how it works or it doesn't. It's just mm-hmm. there's no, you know, there are some nice you know, highlights going through that, you know, going back a little bit, but he stands out. I mean, just singularly, 49er. And it is funny because, as we said with David Donk the other morning, he's a horse, I think, Sid, that, you know, some people really latched onto and is one of those kinds of horses that some people kind of got involved, I think, in the game. I hear him mentioned as who's the horse that got you hooked? And I hear his name brought up as that.
Yeah. And of course, you know, he was racing during that period when Winning Colors was his contemporary and she won the Derby. And then there was that Preakness where, you know, Woody and Wayne had some bad blood and Woody sent 49er up against Winning Colors and kind of killed both of them. And, Woody wasn't the guy to back down. And, it was a spoke of an era, too, you know, where horses kind of in that late 80s era when there were still some horses that, and you had trainers from prior years like Woody that they weren't afraid to run their horses and they weren't afraid to, tell guys what they thought. And it added a lot of color to the sport. And in that period, you know, believe it or not, Woody actually ended up looking more like a villain, as Kelly Riley pointed out in her piece. I happened to live through it like you did, so we knew about it. There are a lot of younger people writing about it that go back and read about it. But, yeah, I still vividly remember that era of 49er, Winning Colors, Risen Star, Seeking the Gold. It was quite the arena where a lot of, you know, top horses appeared.
There's so much about this that I could throw at you too. I'm looking Sid at the second dam continue, here's one of those stories that I bring up. She was much more productive than her daughter, and you get a 49er, that's great. That's great. However, she herself got five black type winners, including one of those horses that time forgot, Yamanin, that was a hell of a nice, an Herbiger son that was a very nice racehorse. And in the 70s, a perpetual stake winner, Tuarta, also a very good.
And Tuarta is the dam of Swale.
There you go. You said Swale. Well done. Well done. List, perpetual list, Tuerta, continue. Who else? Continue. Let's see. Who else? Somebody else. Oh, and File. File. What did she win? His dam. She won a division of the Cinderella Stakes at Arlington, the 1979 Cinderella. That was her black type.
What a great. The Claiborne family, you got Swale in there, you got all these horses you're talking about, and they're all bred to, you know, the way it works is they're bred to, each mare is by a Claiborne stallion and then bred to a Claiborne stallion, and then that foal is then bred to another Claiborne stallion. And in the case of Swale, Tuerta, it was by Forley, a Claiborne sire. Tuerta's second dam, Double J Claiborne. Third dam by Nashua, Claiborne sire. Well, they got Tuerta, and then they bred her to a non-Claiborne stallion in Seattle Slough. But there's a big connection because Seattle Slough is by bold reasoning stood at Claiborne. And as a matter of fact, Seattle Slough's mating, as I said, bold reasoning, the breeder, Ben Castleman, the breeder of Seattle Slough, he bred his mare, My Charmer, who was by the Phipps's Poker. He bred that mare to bold reasoning because Seth Hancock suggested that mate. So essentially, Seattle Slough was a Seth Hancock design mate based on his staff, the bold reasoning who was actually standing there at the time. And if you look at the mating, you'll see why. Bold reasoning, that's that bold ruler, natural ruler line, out of a mare by Poker, Round Table, Prince Quillo. Well, that's, guess what? That's natural ruler, Prince Quillo. Bold ruler, natural ruler, Prince Quillo. That's the same combination of Secretariat. It's the same combination of Never Bend. It's the same combination of Mill Reef. Captain Guggenheim's Never Bend. Meadow Stud Secretariat, or Paul Mellon's Mill Reef, based on that same crop. And that's what Seattle Slough bred on, and it was recommended by Seth Hancock. So that's how that works.
and has been working for over a century. Exactly. Now, Sid, this was tremendous. I appreciate it as always. And those of you that are out there, you can work with Sid, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill & Dale, and call Work Thoroughbred Consultants, 510-490-1111, 510-490-1111. And Sid will sit down with you and go through your brood mares. Obviously, there's only a handful of late babies yet to drop, but it's a year-round enterprise. Evaluate what you got, and start to think about next season already. And you can follow Sid, of course, on Twitter. Although you have to ask him. You have to ask him nicely. The spots are like hen's teeth these days to follow Sid. And follow Sire Watch as well, all right? And download the Enix app. Let's take a break. We've got visits with Mary Rampolini, Tom Ventura, Seth Merrow yet, and we're about 14 minutes into the second half of this Wednesday get-together at the races. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horsemen, horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at horsebills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice. Voices sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRF Sports.
University. University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
In the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Are you ready, Boots? Start walking.
We're back at the races, about 13 to the top of the hour. Tom Ventura from OBS will join us. But right now, Mary Rampolini, and Mary has had her finger on the pulse of a number of venues. And as always, we kid Mary about having the best tires in all of racing media, because she will traverse from Louisiana to Arkansas to New Mexico to Texas, you name it. Mary is on the spot, and boy, you had to move fast, Mary, yesterday, because Lone Star, they went from 0 to 60 in about 30 seconds. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Steve. Yes, you know, Mitchell and Tires handle that very well. So, right away back in business at Lone Star Park after the Texas Racing Commission meeting on Tuesday. The commission had asked the state's tracks for updates on their 2020 meets. So Lone Star had proposed the possibility of opening on Friday, because the governor's reopening plan here in Texas provided that window to open, and with some help from the Racing Commission, because there happens to be, of course, a lot of regulatory things in place, including licensing of the participants that need licensing. They are planning to open Friday, so they're taking entries today, Steve, for Friday's opener.
So a rare 2-day turnaround these days, and so there'll be an overnight later, and Scott Wells basically jumped at the chance to make this happen. What are their plans, Mary, in terms of how the season will proceed, and days of the week and that kind of thing?
Yeah, that's a good question. We're still learning more officially, I can tell you that, but plans are to race this weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And the track was granted a 44-date meet on Lone Star to race through July 19th. Now, Scott Wells told the commission yesterday during the public meeting that he would request some flexibility. They want to see how these first few weeks go to see if that's, to use his word, achievable to reach those 44 days. So the duration of the meet, we're still going to learn a little bit more about. There is some talk about some Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday racing. I am still waiting to get official word on that, if that will be part of the schedule. Initially here, it will be spectator-free racing. And, you know, we're still learning more about how this meet will shake down. I think they just want to get it up off the ground. The horses have been down in at Lone Star training since, you know, May 4th. That week. So the horses are there and ready to run, and I think they just want to get things underway. One of the things Scott Wells had mentioned a concern about is that they really wanted to get racing going by the end of May, so they wouldn't lose stables out of here, with any delay. Texas is kind of on the upswing now. They've got some legislative support for purses, so that they've been in a nice momentum pattern, a bit of Uncle Mo working for them, in that Sam Houston is coming off a very big meet, and they hope to see that transfer to Lone Star.
No doubt. And, of course, the Sam Houston horses, more or less, were turning up regularly at Oaklawn. And, you know, you covered the closing week here of Will Rogers today, the last day. We talked to John Leese yesterday. And those horses, some I think are heading to Canterbury, and others, you know, the ones that are, you know, that qualify for, you know, the Remington / Lone Star condition book action, they'll join, you know, stablemates down, you know, the Brobergs of the world, Asmussen, etc. You know, what if you had to guess, Mary, what percentage of Will Rogers participants, you know, go to Fair Meadows, and what percentage are good enough to go to Lone Star?
Well, that's a good question. You know, there are a pretty good, you know, I would say about 20-25% of the participants that were maybe Will Rogers hardcore will come over into Lone Star. That's not counting someone like a Steve Asmussen who's already established at Lone Star. But I think we'll see participation. You know, I was talking to trainer Boyd Caster. He's going to come in there with some horses for Gary and Mary West. It's his first time coming back towards to race at Lone Star, to base at Lone Star, rather. And he's a Will Rogers regular. Scott Young is hoping to run some horses in during the Lone Star meet. So there's some different guys. You know, we'll see participation from Joe Offalter, Kerry Craddock. Those are some bonds that generally will come over and participate at Lone Star.
Does now the Von Hemel barns? Do they head toward the Midwest, right? But with Prairie Meadows.
Yes, Donnie Von Hemel's been a regular up at Churchill, and yes, they move into the Prairie market some. Like Mike Beeler, I actually talked to him the other day. He'll be going up into Canterbury with his barn. So so it does spread out a little, and like you mentioned, Fair Meadows coming on. You know, we've got in this market, as far as the Dallas market, you have a good portion of folks coming in from Oaklawn. Your Sam Houston horses, some from Will Rogers, and that's some from New Mexico.
Well, and just looking at last year, Broberg was a runaway trainer title winner with 73 wins. Asmussen 30, Danny Pish, J.R. Caldwell, Brett Calhoun, Mindy Wills, Joe Sharp, George Bryant, Terry Off, Shane Wilson, Alan Milligan, and so on. So actually, you're throwing in some names that are actually fresh, I guess, you know, that circuit through there, Sam Houston, and you think about Remington and so forth. I am asking this, and I'm interested because I just feel like with everybody having paid so much attention and so tuned in to what went on at Oaklawn and then at Will Rogers, that I think some people are going to want to follow horses and follow barns to a place like Lone Star. And Lone Star figures to get some attention, I think, some betting action from people that, you know, that are going to be looking at it for the first time.
Yeah, that's true. They've got folks that maybe didn't follow some of those tracks that you mentioned and have over this pandemic period, now have a line on some of these barns. You know, Robertino Diodoro, who won the title at Oaklawn, is new at Lone Star this meet. So he's someone that people from Oaklawn and Will Rogers players would have a line on some of those horses. And, I think that's a really good point, Steve. It's kind of opening up. This market has had a broader exposure than it might have had, you know, in the past.
Well, let's shift from Texas across to Louisiana. And yesterday's commission meeting, giving the go-ahead to the quarter horse meet at Delta, and Evangeline getting ready for a June to August meet, and Louisiana Downs looking at what, June to September.
Yes. So, those are good points. Louisiana also coming back online, as with Texas. Today, the Louisiana Racing Commission meets, and they're going to look at, just as you said, Evangeline is asking for 50 days of thoroughbred racing from June 5th to August 29th. That's an amended schedule. They were scheduled to open in April. Of course, that was thwarted by the pandemic. And then Delta, as you said, is looking for 36 days of quarter horse racing from June 10th to August 22nd. Those requested dates have horsemen support, according to the agenda. And so that should be decided today. The casinos at both of those tracks were scheduled to open this morning, Steve. So things are moving back into action at Delta and Evangeline. And, yes, Louisiana Downs, as you mentioned, that's all approved and set up to open in early June.
Yeah, Boyd Gaming, they're very obvious, their agenda. Yeah, the horses run as long as the slot machines are changing along. Thank you, Mary. I wanted to get those portions in. And are we missing? Are we missing anybody else? Who else?
Is there anybody? That's a good question. Yeah, you know, Ruidoso comes online Friday.
Friday.
New Mexico track. So New Mexico racing is getting back going. And, I think you've covered very well the market, what's going on in Louisiana and Texas. And Oakland, of course, is wrapped up now. And that's kind of where we sit with things. Oklahoma's has Remington Park's quarter horse meet continues on till the end of the meet, to the end of the month, excuse me. So that's kind of where things sit right now.
There's one other mixed meet probably to include. Retama has got summer dates, right? And they run anything with four legs.
Well, yes, it is a mixed meet coming up, Steve, and that was among the items discussed during the Texas Racing Commission meeting Tuesday, and a full decision on whether or not that July 3rd through September 12th mixed meet will be run. Has not been made yet by the track's ownership. They are looking at the viability of running that meet, kind of looking at all the scenarios. So that's not a firm meet at this stage, as of Tuesday's update that were given to the commission.
All right. I appreciate it. And we'll watch and see about scheduling. One thing that's kind of funny is how so many tracks saw the success of Will Rogers and Fonner, utilizing the Monday Tuesday, and there's already been a number of tracks that are kind of grabbing at that opening and hoping to capitalize on the Monday Tuesday interest. I mean, Fort Erie already was a they were early week participants anyway, but there's a few others. Canterbury's talking about running early dates during the week, and there was somebody else too that I saw. Indiana Grand is going to run Monday through Thursday.
Interesting.
And there's going to be couple of the Monday Tuesday outfits, Mountaineer at night and Assinbois, they're also at night. They're opening on Memorial Day, I believe, on May 25th. By mid June, we're going to be back with about close to 20 ovals operating.
Yeah. Wow. It's amazing how the page is turning so quickly, isn't it? When it wasn't moving fast enough, and then all of a sudden everything's starting to happen here for June, like you said. So.
Well, and Will Rogers, they close today. They've had an amazing season and closes out today. So everybody gets their last licks in at Will Rogers Downs. Mary, I appreciate this and just wanted to, kind of get some specifics for Texas and Louisiana, and glad you folded in New Mexico as well. We'll, we'll reach out and connect with you as things progress.
Yeah, as we know more, we'll be reporting more when we can confirm details and stuff, and we'll all learn as we go along, Steve.
Mary Rampolini, everybody. DRF Rampolini Always a pleasure. We'll take a top of the hour break, and when we come back, we'll roll into hour three. Tom Ventura joins us, and there's some movement you may have seen already this morning on the sales front, with Phasic Tipton adjusting their schedule to coincide in the fall. The Timonium sale will follow Preakness, and you know that's, you know, the Timonium Spring 2-year-old sale is always right after Preakness weekend, but they're adjusting, and that'll coordinate nicely with OBS. So quite a few things to talk about with Tom Ventura, who joins us next. Seth Merrow in a little bit. I'm sure Seth is looking at Tampa today as Tampa begins to see the, you know, the end of their extended meet. They're going to go till the 30th. And so the shifting sands, by the end of next week, we lose Will Rogers. Well, we lose Will Rogers today, but Fahner through next Wednesday, week from today is the last card, and then Tampa days later. So we lose Will Rogers, Fahner, and Tampa. We pick up Ruidoso, Lone Star, Assiniboia, Mountaineer. By the end of the month. So those, yeah, and Ruidoso. So three out, four in. Back after this, Tom Ventura.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
If you are racing 2-year-olds in California, Kentucky, please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Here in Pennsylvania, we have the best breeding program in the country, thanks in part to our Racehorse Development Trust Fund. It's a trust, it's not tax dollars, and by law, our fund is completely protected. These are difficult days for all of us. When life in America gets back to normal, and it will, our PA breeding program will be here, stronger and better than ever. To learn more about how we're protecting the trust, go to PABred.com to watch a short video.
How's it going, Sue?
Hey!
Have you seen this commercial?
What career track are you on?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck.
Isn't that the horse racing school that Bob Baffert went to?
Yeah, Todd Fletcher, too, and lots of other major players in every area of the industry.
Really? Like what?
Well, for starters, we have graduates who are executives at Churchill Downs, NYRA, Darlie America, Gulfstream, Keeneland, you name it. They're also regulators, racing officials, bloodstock agents, track announcers. My class had a job placement rate of almost 90%.
Wow, what other college program has results like that?
What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Took a trip on a bus that I didn't know. Met a girl selling drinks at the disco. Said truth comes back when you let it go. Seems complicated because it's really so simple. Walking down Young Street on a Friday. Can't follow them, gotta do it my way. No fast lane, still on the highway. Moving in and out, no doubt there's a ride.
No time to get down, cause I'm moving on. No time to get down, cause
little crab bucket. Made crab cakes. Made the crab cakes on Sunday. I didn't get a chance to do it Saturday, Preakness Day, but or not Preakness Day as we called it. So I made Blue's crab cakes. Tina was very pleased. Came off very nicely. In fact, Blue called me yesterday. I got to call him back today. Right now, though, we're going down to Ocala, and the news just does not stop when it comes to the sales front and protocols laid out for the upcoming spring sale. And Tom Ventura and Alex Wojciechowski wanting to make sure everybody, you know, feels comfortable and safe.